5:30. I'm Nora Flaherty, and you're listening to Maine Things Considered. On the program tonight, details on Senator Angus King's drug summit today in Brewer. Why it takes so long for people to find out if they're eligible for federal disability benefits. And remembering Maine artist Tom Crotty, who died this weekend. Those stories in a moment. First, this news. I'm Nora Flaherty with this look at Maine news. The widow of a Maine state representative who died in July is running for her husband's seat in the legislature. Maine Democrats selected Jean Noon, a Springvale farmer, to run for the House District 9 seat. William Noon died in July from a rare form of cancer. Jean Noon is an organic sheep farmer who raises the animals on a 75-acre farm. She also worked as an art teacher in public schools for 13 years. She says she was gratified by the numbers of people who supported her nomination during last night's district caucus.
It was really amazing last night to have 60 people show up for the caucus and fabulous turnout and a lot of support for Bill and for me. It was really wonderful.
Maine Democrats say more than 60 party members participated in Monday's nominating caucus in Springvale. The special election is scheduled for November 3rd. The Republicans chose Matthew Harrington of Sanford to run for the seat last week. Pennsylvania-based egg producer Hillendale Farm says it's going to keep the current management in place at Maine's largest egg farm. The company signed a lease to run the farm last month. The lease was signed by Hillendale president Orlin Bethel, who in 2010 refused to answer questions when asked by a congressional committee to testify about a salmonella outbreak. Spokeswoman Melanie Witt says the company is committed to exceeding animal care and environmental standards. And Maine's Turnpike Authority is warning drivers about the return of an E-ZPass scam that spread across much of the country last year. Erin Courtney is with the Turnpike Authority.
The E-ZPass phishing scam has surfaced in the south along the coast. It was in Baltimore. We haven't had anybody letting us know that they've received this email phishing scam of our customers, that, to my knowledge at this point.
The scam involved emails saying recipients have an unpaid balance that contain a computer virus. Courtney says if you receive an email that looks like it's from E-ZPass about an unpaid balance, do not open it. She says the state will always notify people by mail, not by email, if they owe money. And if you are confused or unclear on what's going on, you can call the E-ZPass Service Center if you have any doubts. In weather tonight, showers and storms winding down overnight, still muggy with some foggy areas and lows in the 60s. Tomorrow, partly to mostly cloudy with some showers and isolated thunder. Still humid, highs in the low 70s to low 80s north to south. This is Maine Things Considered on MPBN Radio. I'm Nora Flaherty. Nearly every weekday, the members of Maine's congressional delegation are asked by a constituent from back home for help with their application for Social Security disability benefits. To qualify, a person has to be unable to work, but what has some lawmakers upset is how long it takes for the federal government to determine whether a person is eligible or not. Mal Leary has more.
For many seeking Social Security disability benefits, the case is clear, and payments are granted by the Social Security Administration. But in more complicated cases, when an appeal is involved, the average wait to get a hearing is 460 days.
The bottom line is that it is simply outrageous for an individual who has earned his or her Social Security disability benefits and is unable to work to have to wait for well over a year in order to get an answer.
Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine says part of the problem is that there are not enough administrative law judges to hear all of the appeals in a timely manner. And some judges, she says, take a much longer time to decide a case than others. Independent Senator Angus King agrees that the efficiency of the system needs review, and that includes a look at staffing.
The average administrative law judge across the country has something like 600 cases, 550-something cases. That's an awful lot of paperwork and decision-making. So we've got to adequately staff the agency in order to get the work done.
Congresswoman Shelley Pingree says there's also a problem on the demand side. The 1st District Democrat says that Social Security trust funds are running out of money as the baby boomer generation grows older and retire. And she says more of them are becoming disabled as well. Pingree says many Republicans in the House are pushing for cuts in benefit levels to solve the financial problems of the system, but she rejects that approach.
They won't put money back into the fund unless we have benefit cuts. So that's a big battle. I don't think most of us want to see benefit cuts for people who are, you know, counting on retirement or disability benefits. And my solution to that is we just raise the cap.
The cap Pingree is referring to is the maximum $119,000 a year in wages that an individual can be taxed to fund Social Security. She says the more you make, the more you should pay into the Social Security system, and believes that there should be no cap on taxable income. Republican Congressman Bruce Poliquin says he supports improving the system to reduce backlogs and to get benefits to those who need them. He also supports restricting unemployment benefits for those seeking disability coverage under Social Security.
I co-sponsored a bill that doesn't allow this double dipping. It just doesn't make sense to me. That being said, those who really need these benefits, who are disabled, we need to get off the dime and make sure that we push as fast as we can to address those claims.
There are several bills in both the House and Senate to address some of these problems, including proposals to change the terms of administrative law judges from lifetime appointments to fixed terms, so their performance can be reviewed and considered. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Leary.
A well-known figure in the Maine art world died over the weekend. As well as being a respected painter, Tom Crotty was an outspoken art promoter and gallery operator who championed the work of many other Maine artists. Tom Porter has more.
For those who were close to him, Tom Crotty carves out a very large place in the memory, says art historian Dan O'Leary. O'Leary, who as director of the Portland Museum of Art organised a major exhibition of Crotty's work in 2003, recalls one story in particular from Crotty's childhood in a tough Boston neighbourhood.
He was working in a gas station and he'd come out against some gang group. He was about 15. His gang members pulled up in a car and the driver stuck a gun in his face when he went to see what they wanted. And Tom was so angry at the guy, he grabbed the gun, chewed him out, and then threw the gun back at him.
Tom Crotty employed a similar fearlessness when it came to chewing out opponents in the art world, says O'Leary.
He felt that the art world really didn't pay enough attention to quality. He was fiercely loyal to the artists that he represented. He wasn't particularly nice to the ones that he disagreed with, but he was always sincere.
Crotty moved to Maine in 1964 and 2 years later opened the Frost Gully Gallery in Freeport, which is described as Maine's oldest year-round professional art gallery. At various times, Crotty also ran galleries in Portland and Thomaston. Among the artists he represented, Darlof Ipkar, who's perhaps best known for her illustrations of animals.
He had a long history of, opposing the art establishment in Maine.
Ipkar says there was a time when many gallery operators in Maine were reluctant to show homegrown talent, preferring instead travelling exhibits from out-of-state artists, something which angered Crotty. He was also an extremely good painter himself, recalls Ipkar.
Oh, he was a realist in amazing details, but always something very individual about his style.
Crotty's work is often described as photorealism. For example, he created many seascapes in incredibly intricate, almost photographic detail. But the problem that Dan O'Leary encountered when trying to put together the PMA exhibition, he says, was that most of Crotty's paintings were in private hands and had to be tracked down.
The thing that always struck me was you could never see his works. So when I organized the exhibition of his paintings, I had to go outside of Portland to find him. And it wound up that his most beautiful and really amazing paintings were in Ohio.
The PMA show changed Crotty's life, says O'Leary, and exposed a lot of people to his work, so much so that orders for more paintings came flooding in, and Crotty had to create a waiting list with nearly 40 names on it.
But I think he'll be remembered foremost as a painter.
But as well as being an artist, Tom Crotty's son David Crotty says his father should also be remembered as a patron of the arts, an outspoken advocate for those whose work he admired.
Someone who recognized talent in other people as well. He was very good at that. He had a good eye for seeing other people's work and making good quality judgments about it.
Tom Crotty, who was 80, died on Saturday. He had been diagnosed with cancer last year. For MPBN News, I'm Tom Porter.
Opiate dependency is a disease, and those suffering from addiction should have the same ready access to effective treatments as patients with cancer or diabetes. That was one of the major messages echoed by many speakers at U.S. Senator Angus King's Forum on Opiate Addiction this morning in Brewer. King's Forum, looking at how the federal government ought to address the problem, comes as Maine struggles with a surge in heroin use that's pushed overdose deaths to record highs. Jay Field was there. He has this report.
208 people died of drug overdoses in Maine last year. 57 of those deaths were due primarily to heroin. Both numbers set a record in Maine. And this year, the trend shows no sign of slowing down. According to the Maine Attorney General's office, there have been 105 overdose deaths so far in 2015, with heroin believed to be responsible for 37 of them.
We read about overdoses, and we read about people going into treatment, and you really have to multiply those numbers often by two or three or four.
To come up with, as King noted in his opening remarks at Tuesday's forum, the actual number of people that are affected in some way by one person's addiction or overdose.
Because it's families that often bear a huge part of the brunt of this problem.
Families like Dr. Lynn Willetts from Brunswick.
We have three children. I even brought a picture.
A psychiatrist, Willette unfolded a rumpled photograph of her daughter and twin sons as Senator King, Congresswoman Shelley Pingree, and National Drug Control Policy Director Michael Botticelli listened from the front of the room. Dr. Thomas Keating, Willette's husband and the children's father, stood at her side, tears welling in his eyes.
Our son, Brendan, he passed away in December 2013, shortly before his 23rd birthday. Of an overdose of heroin.
Brendan Keating had lots of treatment for his heroin problem, but was not able to overcome it. Prior to his son's struggles, Thomas Keating, an oncology physician, says he had an arrogant attitude about addiction. No longer.
We need to talk about it. We need to please avoid blame. Addiction is, as I have found, an incredibly powerful force.
Treatment experts, healthcare providers, and law enforcement officials at the forum all echoed Keating's call to end the stigma surrounding addiction. The discussion then shifted to solutions. What works, King wanted to know. How can Washington help? Bill Lowenstein, a former associate director of the Maine Office of Substance Abuse, called for more use of medications like Suboxone to treat addicts.
You can be in medication-assisted treatment, be a recovering person, contribute to society, all those pieces around that.
Others spoke in favor of allowing nurse practitioners and even psychiatrists to prescribe Suboxone without having to go through training and certification. But not all treatment experts think that's a great idea. Dr. Meredith Norris is medical director of Grace Street Services in Lewiston.
I agree with increasing availability of Suboxone, but as my experience from trying to browbeat my colleagues into doing it, I don't really want people who don't know what they're doing to be treating addiction in Maine. I think having more people who are interested in it have more ability to serve a larger population would be a good idea. I don't think we need more people having it as their retirement plan, their Suboxone practice.
Others called for more funding from Washington to help fill gaps caused by the steadily decreasing number of inpatient treatment beds in the state. Earlier this month, Angus King and Susan Collins signed a letter with fellow U.S. senators calling on U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Sylvia Burwell to increase access to treatment for opiate addiction. For MPBN News, I'm Jay Field.
Let's check in on the weather right now.
A soupy, swampy tropical envelope is where Maine resides, with no change overnight. Torrential showers and a few thunderstorms will press east this evening, collapsing around midnight west of the Kennebec. Very muggy areas of dense fog, especially south and west, 60 statewide. A cool front will plod east at a snail's pace tomorrow. Following a foggy dawn, expect showers and isolated afternoon thunderstorms. The exception, southwestern counties, where skies will partially clear, only an isolated afternoon shower or thundershower. Still sticky statewide, low 70s north, low 80s south. Thursday, drier air at last. Over northern and western Maine, limited sun with a few showers. For the southwestern third of Maine, an even blend of sun and clouds. Upper 60s north to 80s south. Friday will be the sweetest day of the week, mid-70s north, low 80s south. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Barbara Caridi, A.J. Higgins, Ed Morin, and Susan Sharon.